All right, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest, and safest way to bet on all things sports. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day right around the corner, Bet Online has all the latest news, scores, and odds to help you win big. The best part? You'll receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive literally free money. Plus, signing up is a great way to support the podcast you're listening to in your ears right now. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts.
Blue Wire. Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going
to
be scary. Not for us.
James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is on the
What's up, guys? Welcome to this podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Craig Ackerman. Craig, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's been a while since I talked to you. How have you been? Like, how have you been personally, before we get into the Rockets?
Well, I was a little sick over the All-Star break and still have a little bit of a cough, but other than that, I'm fine and nobody really cares, but thank you for asking.
No, I care, Craig.
Okay,
so let's get into this first. What did you think when the Rockets first traded for Robert Covington? Actually, let's go further than that. Did you ever believe the Rockets would trade Clint Capela even when the first rumors are coming out?
I've been around long enough to realize that anything is possible when Daryl is in charge. And so I'm never surprised by anything that happens around here. What I realized over the last year and a half, and look, I got to preface this by saying that Clint's a terrific young player, and I think once he gets healthy, he's going to be a really good fit with the Atlanta Hawks. But Clint is very dependent on ball passes to be able to contribute on offense, and over the last season plus, more and more that's been taken away by opposing defenses. So they have not been as effective and efficient with him as the vertical spacers we've seen in years past. And then you couple him with Russell Westbrook, and then you have two non-floor spacers out there, which was kind of hurting everybody. That kind of hurt that lob situation that I was just discussing. It clogged the lane for James driving. It clogged the lane for Russell Westbrook driving. And so, again, nothing surprises me. And I kind of understood the rationale when it happened. I will admit that when it did happen, I still was very much like, okay, we need to take a wait and see, you know, approach here, because, you know, this will still be very much a work in progress. But I think now that we're, what, 8, 10, 11 games in to the Rockets, you know, selling out full bore on small ball, it looks like it's going to work.
Yeah, and I understood all that. Like, I understood the Rockets running less and less pick and roll. I understood the floor spacing element. This trade still surprised me, because in general, like, just going, like, this is just a Morey thing. Like, Morey does not make major trades at the trade deadline. He makes those in the offseason. He does not make them during the trade deadline. He'll more likely make a trade for Lou Williams or Corey Brewer or something like that than he will make a trade involving a major piece of his roster, and that's the part that threw me off. And I thought if the Rockets were ever going to trade Clint Capela, it would happen in the offseason. And, you know, that part of it threw me off. And obviously, you know, going all in on small ball, like, that was, it's still a controversial idea. And yes, the early returns have been good, but it is very, very new. And this idea that other teams have done it before, yeah, the other teams have done small ball before, but they haven't done it for 48 minutes a game, and that's what's so unique about this. And, like, I mean, if you just look at P.J. Tucker's minutes, he's already played over 200 more minutes at center than Draymond Green, even at his peak. And there's still 20-plus games remaining in the Rockets' season. So that just tells you how much more of this the Rockets have.
Well, the Rockets will tell you that P.J. Tucker's, he's not their center. He doesn't defend centers, but that lies with James Harden and now Robert Covington and Eric Gorham, he's on the floor. I mean, they'll tell you that he's basically guarding the best perimeter defender, even though, again, he does get switched up there. But I get your point that the Warriors did this when it came down to winning time, and in large part, that's what made nobody could match up with that group. And the Rockets, you got to go back a couple of years ago. They looked at Golden State as the gold standard, which was the appropriate way to look at things, as the team to beat, one of the great teams in the history of the sport. And how do we match up with them? How do we try to compete with them? Because nobody is. And they figured that they've got to try to match their elite level of small ball with a level of their own that, unfortunately, was a hamstring and a fluky 0-for-27 shooting performance from three away from the Rockets getting to the NBA Finals. And I don't realize this is all revisionist history, but the Finals, I think the Rockets probably would have won if they would have gotten there. They didn't. Chris Paul got hurt. They had double-digit leads in both those games. Missed all the threes. It didn't happen. Golden State moved on 1-1. You know, they went on to win another title. But that's really the main impetus for the Rockets initially, you know, trying to put together the roster that they did a couple of years ago, is how do we match up with Golden State, because their death lineup, if you will, was so dominant.
Yeah. So here are the early returns. Well, actually, let's talk about Robert Covington for a second, because this thing with the blocks, it's just getting out of hand. It's ridiculous. I didn't know he had this in him. I knew he was a good shot blocker, but he only had one block a game. Right now with the Rockets, he's averaging 2.6. And I feel like playing more power forward and playing more center, playing more big positions, has unlocked something within him defensively that I don't think other teams saw. Like, just playing down the paint, being able to get those weak side blocks, being in those positions and playing big. His, you know, most teams have played him at small forward, and I've even seen him play shooting guard at times. Like, playing, you know, full-time power forward and occasionally center is different for him, and I feel like it's unlocked something that, you know, it's really, you know, negated some of the paint presence that Clint Capella had, because, you know, Robert Covington and PJ Tucker have been playing so big.
Well, you know, one thing also kind of going back to the Capella point is that the Rockets, the last several seasons, even with him, have not been a very good defensive team in the paint. They've been bottom third. You know, they're rebounding the last couple of seasons, even with Clint Capella and his big numbers. They've not been very good. So, again, this trade was about, all right, how do we double and triple down on the things that we do well and try to maximize those and just kind of forget about the stuff that we don't do well and see if that's ultimately enough, you know, to get us over the hump. But I think with Robert Covington and everybody else, is that in addition to them, you know, them going small, it's forced a mentality where they've got to play harder. And I think we've seen some effort issues rear its ugly head at times earlier this season. And with this group, there's no other way to play. If they don't play all out and they don't play hard, then they're going to get burned at the rim, and now they can switch everything. And since they're switching everything and they're playing harder, and Covington's a very athletic wing player who is already always very good disrupting passing lanes, well, now he's just playing a little bit closer to the rim and disrupting shots at the rim, and he's been terrific. And as you well know, when he and PJ Tucker have shared the floor together, the Rockets' defense has been elite, and that's what they've been looking for. And their offense was always good, even with Clint, but they were just trying to find a way to become better defensively, and it looks like that they've unlocked that as well.
Yeah, so the effort issue point that you said really stuck to me, because I'm not sure if you saw this quote from Austin Rivers last night about the defensive communication with the Rockets and how when they're switching everything, they're forced to communicate like crazy in a way that they haven't had to do before, because they always knew Clint Capella was there in the back to bail them out. Now they don't have that. Their point of attack defense has to be sharp. Their switching has to be sharp. And it's forced them to communicate more, in Austin Rivers' words, than they have in his entire tenure with the Rockets. And that's really something that stuck with me. Like, they're trying so much harder because they have to try so much harder. Playing smaller forces them to give more effort as a team. And I think it's really benefited them defensively.
Yes.
In addition to just being more athletic and having more switchable wings, just the effort issue, like having to gang rebound and having to you know, make everything precise, that's, I think, really helped them.
And it's an us against the world kind of mentality too, because everybody was laughing at them when the trade was made, and everybody was doubting that they could do anything. And it's galvanized the team in terms of, you want to count us out? Well, okay, watch us. And again, I think just between the years, like you mentioned, and we talked about it, just they're playing harder, they're playing smarter, and they're a galvanized group. And then you add J. Jeff Green, and as soon as he was released by Utah, I can't speak publicly when guys are free agents if they're not part of the Rock, well, if they're not part of the Rockets and so forth. But I was talking to our people, like guys, you know, I worked with the team. I was like, oh, they got to try to go get Jeff Green. They got to try to go get Jeff Green. It took a while, but they got him, and he's been amazing. And DeMar Carroll still very much looks like he's got stuff left in the tank, especially defensively. And now all of a sudden, the Rockets, who weren't necessarily the deepest team 2 months ago, or at least a team with depth that the coaching staff trusted, now have legitimate depth and depth that the coaches trust. And I think that's also been a big point over the last couple of weeks, that the Rockets bench has been relatively, they've had their moments, and individually they've had their moments over the last season and a half, but collectively they've been amongst the least productive and least efficient groups in the league, and it looks like that trend has changed as well, and that could be very scary for other teams around the league, because if they can find a way to maximize that second unit, particularly those minutes where James is off and Russ is on, the Rockets are going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, and I had Matt Moore on my podcast last week, and we talked about the additions of Jeff Green and Damari Carroll. And, you know, I talked about how I was, like, really excited to see Damari Carroll on this team and see how he would fit in defensively. And he's like, no, you need to pay attention to Jeff Green. Jeff Green is the bigger addition here. He over the past few years, has made himself into a really productive player, and his reputation precedes him, but he's really bucked that ever since he went to the Cavs and made himself a pretty good player, a pretty good role player, and understood, okay, I'm a role player. These are the things I need to do. I need to have energy. I need to be athletic. I need to play competent defense, and then I can get myself real playing time on these contending teams. And, you know, that so far that's been true. Jeff Green has been the more impactful signing, I would say. Damari Carroll has been good. Like, I thought last night was his best game with the Rockets. He was, especially in that first quarter, defensively, he looked great, getting in passing lanes. And even, I think he got a shot blocked in the first quarter. So he's looked good, but Jeff Green to me has surprised me in, you know, how well he's played so far with the team. So I need to get to this. This is the Rockets in February. They're 8-2 as a team. They have a 119.3 offensive rating, second in the league, 109.0 defensive rating. That's ninth in the league. They're plus 10.4 net rating. That's second in the league, only behind the Bucks, who have been playing out of their minds. So this is all good. I get that, but this right here is the stat that stuck out to me. They're dead last in defensive and offensive rebounding percentage, but they're forcing 18.2 turnovers per game, which is second in the league. They're making up for those possessions that they're losing on the glass with the extra possessions they're getting in turnovers. So this has always been my chief concern. Can you build a good, sustainable defense that will work in the postseason without defensive rebounding? It's a very new school idea, and it's to a lot of people, including myself. Like, I just had my, you know, my suspicions about whether or not it'd work. But over the regular season so far, it has worked. What have you thought about this?
Well, in terms of the playoffs, I guess we're all going to have to find out, right?
Yeah.
And I'm curious myself, and that was part of my wait-and-see approach, you know, that I talked about earlier when the Covington trade was made at the deadline. But that's Mike D'Antoni's been talking about this since the trade, that they feel like where they give up, they weren't a very good rebounding team anyway with Clint, and so they just basically gave in to that notion, right? We're not going to be very good with him, and we're going to be a little bit worse without him, then let's improve in other areas, which is committing less turnovers, forcing more turnovers, and creating other opportunities, and making up for the deficiency on rebounding. He's been preaching that since the trade went down, and he's proven to be right. That the Rockets, they had a lot of turnovers last night, but that game at times was ugly and over, and I think they lost their focus, and it just got a little bit sloppy, but that seems to be the goal, that they think that they, even though on most nights and they're going to get beat up on the glass, that they can make up for that because they're valuing more of their possessions when they have them with fewer turnovers. They're making Russell Westbrook a far more efficient player on each and every possession because he's basically getting the rim whenever he wants to and converting at a ridiculous rate. And then we're going to force other turnovers, which will fuel our transition game, which now fits our personnel even better. So, yeah, he was right that that's what they, that's the edge that they would get. There's no such thing as a as the perfect team. I mean, I guess in recent memory, again, the Warriors of the last 5 years were probably, especially those with the three seasons with Durant, were probably as close to perfect as you could get in NBA history. So you're not going to find many, if any, perfect teams. And so you're going to have a deficiency and a weakness in one area. And again, the Rockets said, okay, well, we weren't all that great there. So, all right, let's just kind of forget about that and let's try to be so much better in these other areas where we think we can be so much better at, and that'll make up the difference. And again, so far, so good.
Mike always talked about how, yeah, we're going to lose the rebounding battle, but can you score on us twice in a row? Like, once you get that second rebound, fine, you'll get it. But can you score on us that second possession? Because we're going to be so good on post defense. Like, we have all these thick defenders that can force really inefficient shots that I don't think you'll be able to score efficiently on that second possession. So we're going to go ahead and give that up. And on top of that, we're going to get these extra possessions through the turnovers. And, you know, it's interesting because last season at the second half when the Rockets really started to make a run post All-Star break, because they also made a run last year post All-Star break, they did this very similarly. Like, they were forcing a bunch of turnovers and weren't rebounding well either. And I'm wondering if the Rockets saw that and decided, screw it, let's try it. Since it worked last season and we think it can be the best way for us to play, let's just double down on it. Let's trade Clint Capella. Let's get Robert Covington. Let's force more and more turnovers. Let's try and be a good defense that way, as you said, because we can't be a good defense the other way. We can't be a good defense in the traditional sense. So we're going to be a good defense in the non-traditional sense. And so far it's worked. 9th in the league in February. I mean, you can't argue with the results so far.
No, not whatsoever. And again, are they sustainable over the rest of the regular season on in the playoffs? I mean, we'll all find out. But I mean, it was that seems to be the general idea and theory behind all of this. Not to mention Clint. As I said, he's a really good young player, and I think he's going to have a really good time with the Atlanta Hawks once he gets healthy. He was really the Rockets' only tradable asset in terms of young player on a value contract that would be coveted. If you were looking to drastically improve this team, and let's not be fooling ourselves, so the window for this team isn't like 5 years on down the road. It's basically, you know, the prime window for this team is this season and next season and maybe one more after that, but the window is tight here with this group. And so if we're going to go for it, then we got to go for it. And as we all know, again, going back to my initial point, nothing ever surprises me around here. Daryl has been as much of a risk taker as there's ever been in his position in this league. He's always willing to roll the dice and live with the results, even though sometimes those results don't pan out and he gets heavily criticized for it, but he doesn't care. He's going to do things his way, and it seems like that's been the case as well for Mike D'Antoni over the course of his career. And they said, again, we're going to quadruple, double, triple down on this, and we will live with the results, whatever those results may be. And again, that's all still to be determined.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not one to meddle in conspiracy theories. I'm someone who I will believe what I'm told. But I just don't buy that Robert Covington 6'7". I don't care what anybody says. It's an election year. You cannot lie. I want people to be honest about this. I've stood next to the guy. I've seen him in person. There's no way he's not at least 6'8", or if not 6'9". Like this idea that the Rockets are playing 6'7" or under guys like every game, like that's just not true. Like, Robert Covington, I feel, is much, much bigger than his listed height. I don't care that the NBA did these height measurements at the beginning of the season. I feel like they messed up there or someone fudged it. He's much taller than 6'7".
When he was in that game against the Lakers, when he was standing next to Anthony Davis, it certainly seemed like he was bigger than he was listed. It seemed that way to me, and I was there. I was like, he seems a little bit bigger than I thought he was. But he's got great length. He's very athletic. P.J. Tucker, what he gives up in height, he achieves in. And he's got long arms, too. And those two guys play really, really, really hard. And that's typically what half the battle is in sports, right? I mean, if you play hard, you can make up for a lot of shortcomings. And this team, ever since it's now at its product where we currently see it at, this team is playing incredibly hard. I mean, Ben McLemore can't miss a shot. Austin Rivers, after that awful game that he had in Oklahoma City when Russell Westbrook went back and the Rockets were blown out, has been better than at any point he's been. And he was pretty darn good last year after he was after he decided to sign after being released by the Suns. And he was pretty darn good for the Rockets last year. But since that OKC game, I think he's been better than he was at any point last year, which is a really good thing. He's thriving in this five-out system, able to get to the rim, and he's knocking down shots. And again, Ben McLemore is a guy who had 1 foot out of the league. The Rockets, as they've done over and over and over and over again over the years, are always, if somebody's available, willing to roll the dice on a guy who was selected high in the lottery, and they rolled the dice on Ben McLemore, who had 1 foot out of the league, and he has made them look really good because he has played really good basketball ever since he had it over the, since the first 6 weeks of the year when he was just kind of feeling his way through and kind of learning his new team. He's been absolutely terrific. He's their best shooter. The pieces are just, they just seem to be coming along. Everything seems to be fitting at the right time. There's still some work to be done because they still have to try to jump over both the Clippers and the Nuggets, and that's not going to be an easy task. Nobody's catching the Lakers at this point, so the goal is to try to finish as high as two, and at this rate, who knows, maybe with the way they're playing and the way the Jazz are playing, maybe it'll be Houston and Utah again for the third straight year in that kind of a matchup, but that's their goal. Their goal initially was to finish first, but again, that's out of the equation now, and they have, what, how many games we have left? What, 20, 25, 24, something like that? They're 38 and 20 now, so what, 24 games left? We'll see if they can jump over both of those teams. They don't play Denver anymore, so that's not going to help their cause in that regard. But they do play the Clippers one more time, and that would be an awfully big game in Houston because much like this most recent game in Salt Lake City, the tiebreaker would be on the line. So they could, with a win, get a two-game swing in the standings over the Clippers. So, and outside of some matchups here or there, the Rockets do have a fairly favorable schedule the rest of the season, one that you would think that they could take advantage of, especially when you go into the last, you hit April when they don't even leave the state of Texas after they come off that big long road trip, which won't be easy. But once they come off of that, they don't even leave the state of Texas to end the regular season. So you would think that with their added depth and very little travel, and they should be primed, rested, and rolling when the playoffs begin.
Yeah, so it's not impossible. Like the second seed is very much in their gas. Like they just have to put up an absurd winning percentage, which, as you said, their schedule is very favorable to end out the year. They're two games behind of the Nuggets right now. They can finish this up. They can get a high winning percentage. They just have to wait for a couple things to go their way. So I believe you mentioned,
wouldn't it be nice to finish on the opposite bracket of the Lakers and Clippers?
I mean, that's what they would hope for, right?
Whether they finish two or three. Right, if they finish, they would prefer, I think, 2-3 in some order would be Denver, Houston, and then the Clippers finishing fourth, I think, would be an ideal playoff situation.
Yeah, you would think that would work to their benefit, and obviously, home court advantage for the first two rounds of the playoffs would really, really help their cause. So, I believe you mentioned Westbrook earlier. And he in the month of February has just been ridiculous. 32.3 points per game, 7.1 rebounds per game, 6.1 assists per game, 1.6 steals per game, 54.2% shooting from the field. And he's actually been really good from three-point range, 38.9% from three-point range. He's only taking like two per game. But in the threes that he's taking, he's actually been pretty good.
They're mostly catch and shoots, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they're mostly wide open catch and shoot, and he's not taking as much as he was in the beginning of the season. So he's limiting those, which has worked to his benefit. He has a true shooting percentage of 58.7, which is really good. An interesting development that I've been keeping an eye on, and this is actually Westbrook's most efficient season since his MVP year, like true shooting percentage wise. He started off the year awful. And ever since then he's abandoned shooting threes and he's had this additional spacing. He's looked great. I mean, this has changed the way I thought of the Westbrook trade in that I'm actually not as opposed to it as I was before. I still wouldn't have done it myself, but I think I understand their reasoning now. I think if you look at Harden and Westbrook for the month of February, they're on pace to be the first two teammates to average 30 points per game since Shaq and Kobe. So they're playing really, really well alongside each other in a way I didn't think they'd coalesce to at the beginning of the season.
Well, I've said this before when the Rockets played so many years against Russ. There's good Russ and there's bad Russ. And then when the Rockets were playing against him, he wanted to maximize the bad Russ because that meant he was very inefficient. And even though he might put up 50 points in a game, you're probably going to walk out of the gym a winner because he was put it up in a very inefficient fashion, and that's what the Rockets have been trying to work on all season. And ultimately, I mean, everything we've already talked about the trade, I mean, that's what this comes down to, right? I mean, Russ is under contract for 3 more years after this, right? 3 more years after this at a very high number. And I know, realize there's no such thing as an unturnable contract, but, you know, it's a very high number for a guy who's not getting any younger. And his fit has to be right in certain places. And so basically you're married to Russell Westbrook. And so how do you try to take his unique and explosive skill set and maximize it to its greatest efficiency? And that ultimately, for everything that we've already discussed about the trade, that's what it was about. And, you know, he's been playing great since the first week of December, but his efficiency, as you mentioned, over the last month has been where they need it to be. And those minutes, again, where Harden is off and Russ is on, might ultimately make or break this team from making a deep playoff run. And if they can make those minutes where Harden is off and Russ is on ones that they're winning, then, again, this team is going to be really, really hard to beat, because even if James is having an off night and a poor shooting game, the Rockets still end up typically winning those minutes anyway because he's just such a unique player. But when he takes rests and they have fallen off dramatically, they need Russ to take over those reins and be a net positive player, and to a lesser extent, Eric Gordon as well. And that was the whole impetus, the main impetus behind this trade. And it, too, seems to be working because they've unlocked what seems to be a much younger, super explosive Russell Westbrook that absolutely positively cannot be stopped one-on-one going to the basket. Some of the plays he made last night, even after Grizzlies makes, were amazing. I mean, he beat like 5 guys down the floor for bucket after bucket after bucket, and this is the kind of player that the Rockets need if they ultimately want to get to the finals and compete for a championship.
Yeah, he's just getting down the court in like less than 4 seconds. He's looked so fast, and I feel like part of this is the knee, right? He had that procedure at the beginning of the season with his knee. He missed some of training camp in preseason, and it took him some time to get over that, and I feel like he's starting to look like more of himself again. I went back and I listened to the podcast I had with you in the offseason, and I remember the specific questions that stuck with me, so I wrote it down. And you asked the question, how can the Rockets harness the good Russ and limit the bad Russ? And I feel like that's part of the logic that went into the trade deadline, right? And part of the logic that's going into Russ playing the way he's playing in limiting his three-pointers, and just, instead of those three-pointers, I'm going to go to the basket, and if I see a mid-ranger, that's fine, I'll take it. But my primary goal was to get to the basket, and if I get fouled at the rim, I'll get fouled at the rim, and I'll shoot, you know, 75 to 85% at the free throw line. And I feel like he's looked like more of himself, and, you know, I'll go ahead and ask you, like, how have your thoughts at all changed since the trade? I remember, like, you said something along the lines of you didn't really have an opinion at this time. You wanted to see more of it. Now that you've seen 50 or so games of Russell Westbrook, how do you feel about the trade now?
Well, you know, one of the ironies is that when the trade was first made, it was everybody thought, well, you know, everybody kind of understood some of his shortcomings. He's like, he's a Hall of Fame player. He's going into the Hall of Fame. He's had enormous success, both individually and team-wise, in his career. But everybody understood what his shortcomings are and were, and what they may or may not mean to this new Rockets team. But everybody felt like, okay, we're going to get Russ. You know, you don't necessarily have to worry about this guy being hurt. And Chris Paul had been hurt the previous couple of years. The irony is that Chris Paul hasn't been hurt at all this season.
Yeah.
With Oklahoma City, has actually played more games than Russell Westbrook. But credit to Chris. He's had a great year. And a little side note, when we were in Minneapolis the last time, they actually came in, was it the night before our game? Because Minnesota had a home-and-home back-to-back with us and OKC. And they came in, and we had a chance to catch up with them briefly, kind of in the lobby of the hotel. And really great guy, and I'm so happy for his success. And I thought he was terrific when he was here. The problem is that when he was here, you know, he kept getting hurt, and that was a concern for this team. And obviously, it did not help their cause in the Western Conference Finals against Golden State. But to me, as you mentioned, it always came down to, can you maximize the good Russ? Because good Russ is outstanding. Good Russ is explosive. Good Russ is as good of a in front of a watch as there is in the league. The dude plays so hard all the time. Sometimes he, you know, straddles, he crosses over that line, as we've seen some of these technical fouls, and he tends to get a lot of control sometimes and turn the ball over in bad situations. But the guy plays super hard all the time, and he is as good as they come in the league playing downhill. And so you want to try to get him playing downhill as often as possible. And with the lane now completely cleared up and nobody there to clog it up, and the Rockets forcing more turnovers, which means more opportunities for runouts, you've got a whole lot of good Russ, and that should mean good things for this team moving forward.
Yeah, the technical fouls thing is a storyline I did not expect to develop this season. Like, that's he is really striding that line.
You know, he's always a teacher. He's always amongst the leaders.
But
so is Chris Paul, for that matter.
But he's in suspension range now. Has he ever gotten to 14 technical fouls? Like, do you have the stats on that?
I don't know if he's gotten. I'm pretty sure he's flirted with a suspension. I don't know if he's gotten all the way there, but my guess, if I had to guess, I don't have anything in front of me on this. My guess is he's flirted with this many times. The one last night I know has apparently it's not going to be rescinded. That was a little bogus. To me, the two that he picked up against the Warriors were unneeded and unnecessary. And again, a guy like him, he needs to walk that line to be the play. You know, that's the reason why he's going to go into the Hall of Fame, and he's an MVP, and he's had the success that he's had in this league because he walks that fine line, because that's what he needs to be the player that he is. And occasionally he crosses over that line. The two tees against Golden State were unneeded and unnecessary in a game the Rockets were dominating, and then the one last night, and you know, would just been another tee, and nobody, it wouldn't really be that big of a deal. But you know, now it is, and I guess if he ultimately is going to get to 16, you'd prefer it to be in the game before the second night of a back to back, where you're going to sit anyway, so it wouldn't be a big deal, and then hopefully he can just, you know, stay relaxed in that regard, and have this thing reset in the playoffs, which I highly doubt he'll ever reach the T threshold in the playoffs. But my guess is that he's probably flirted with this before.
Yeah, and the NBA will never admit this, but I do believe that some players have a shorter leash with the technical fouls than others, and I feel like Westbrook is definitely one of those players. Like, the technical foul last night, that was such a high school technical foul, like taunting, like really, like it's such a, like a B team kind of foul, like technical foul, like it's something that, you know, I wish we'd see less of in the league. It's just we're better than that, but it is something that the Rockets and Westbrook have to monitor and be careful of going forward. And if it comes to that, you know, on a back to back, obviously you'd like that to come before then. But you know what's funny? Right now, the Rockets are in a 4-5 matchup with the Thunder. If the season ended today, going back to the Chris Paul trade, the Rockets would play the Thunder in the first round. Like, that's a legitimate, like, playoff threat. Like, as in, like,
that would be insane.
It would be an awesome series. The drama would be spectacular. Like, I don't know if OKC can hold on to this 4-5 matchup, but if they can, or if they drop down to 6 and the Rockets can get the 3 seed, like that's just popcorn playoff matchup.
Yeah, it would be epic. And I have to tip my cap. And again, the Rockets got crushed in Oklahoma City. It was, again, second game of back to back for them, but the atmosphere and what they did for Russ was absolutely incredible. They kind of did things a little bit differently. Their tribute video came before the game, right before he was introduced. And I was talking with one of their broadcasters about this. There really aren't many markets and players in the league where I think if a guy had spent as much time as he had in one organization and then left and came back for the first time, that the organization would do that for him, and then the fans would give that player that kind of reception. The only other guy in the league I can think of would be Damian Lillard. Like, if for some reason they traded him away and he came back for the first time. It was incredible, and that series would just be absolutely, as you mentioned, lots of popcorn for everybody, because you've got some incredible competitors. All the storylines, all the ties, They have they do have playoff history, lots of playoff history between the two organizations. It would be epic if it ended up transpiring, and I think it would be fun for a lot of basketball fans. So I don't think it necessarily would be an easy series for the Rockets, but it would be epic for basketball fans for sure.
The only thing that would make it better is if they got Scott Foster for one of those games. Man, that would just put it over the top in terms of the theatrics. Everybody better keep their jerseys tucked in. That's what I'll say. So thank you so much for coming on, Craig. Where can we follow your work and follow you on Twitter?
Twitter's CA_Rollup, and home radio, road TV, generally speaking, although I do have radio in Boston Saturday night since it's an ABC exclusive, so Matt Thomas and I will have the play call from Boston, one of my favorite places in the league, to do games. That atmosphere Saturday night is going to be absolutely incredible, as it normally is in Boston, but I think people will really be frothing at their mouths for that game, because Boston's playing really well. The Rockets already beat them once, so they're going to want to extract some revenge on Houston. The Rockets want to keep rolling. Both teams are in very tight playoff races in their respective conferences, but it will be awesome. And Monday night, of course, when we go back to New York, we are doing TV, so I'll do TV there. So I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right, that was Craig Ackerman. Be sure to follow him on Twitter and listen to him on the Rockets broadcast. He is really, really freaking good, like way above average on League Pass good. Subscribe to this podcast on Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Give us 5 stars because I really hope people find the show. Follow me on Twitter @SolomonLeeNBA. And yeah, guys, good night.